Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcast.
Oh, wait, shoot, wait. Oh, God, here we go. All right, I'm ready. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we try, anyway, to make today make sense.
I'm Nova Safo, in for Kimberly Adams. Thanks, everybody, for joining us today. It's August 17th, Thursday, or as we like to call it on the Marketplace Morning Report team, Friday Junior.
Friday Junior. You know, indeed. I loved, well, so when I was on the morning show, which was a very long time ago, but I did the overnights for 4 years, and the thing about the overnights was, you always earned your weekend. By the time Friday morning rolled around and you were off the shift and it was 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning and you were done and you'd been up since midnight.
Yeah.
Because that's when, you know, the show was out of L.A. back then as opposed to in New York. You'd really earned your weekend, man. You were like, you had earned your weekend. And if you played your cards right, you got a 3-day weekend because you got Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't want to get any sleep for Monday morning.
Well,
yeah.
Sleep when you're dead. Sleep when you're dead. That's what they said when I was in college. All right. We're going to do some audio from this week's news. Then we're going to do a little analysis on the side, maybe depending on how we feel about it. And that's what we're going to do.
All right. So let's play that first clip.
I'm not here to declare victory on the economy. Our economy is stronger and better than any industrial nation in the world right now. But we have more work to do. We have a plan that's running, turning things around. The Inflation Reduction Act is a part of that plan. Bidenomics is just another way of saying restoring the American dream.
So, the President of the United States, obviously this week on the one-year anniversary of the Inflation Reduction Act being passed, so look, lots of good stuff in there. I would submit for all that the Democrats like to point to that as a crowning achievement. Oh, Bonds. Hang on a minute. Let me get the dog. Bonsai, come here. Bonds. Come here. Bonsai. Come here. Come here.
That's a great name.
Come here. Come here.
Does he look like a bonsai tree?
Well, she is short and stout, and were she a larger dog, it would not be appropriate. She's sort of a miniature version of a bigger dog. Yeah, I suppose
that's
true.
That's awesome.
She's very sturdy. Anyway, so Biden and the IRA. So look, the Biden administration is taking credit because that's what politicians do, and they should take credit because politicians and presidents also get the blame for the economy when it's not their fault. So I have no problem with the Biden administration claiming credit for having reduced inflation and all of those good things that the Inflation Reduction Act was purported to have done. The catch, of course, is that that's not really what it did. I mean, there were some ancillary measures that did reduce inflation at the margins, but mostly it was a bunch of other stuff that the president wanted to get done, which you can't blame him for. And also, I saw the other day that he gave this speech where he said, I'm sorry we called it the Inflation Reduction Act because there's so much other stuff in there. And I'm like, Joe, you did that as a sop to Senator Manchin, so don't whine about it now.
Right.
Anyway, that's my quick take
this,
on the IRA.
Holding this up back then.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
I mean, I think part of the issue is they have to cram so many things in these giant bills to get everybody on board and something for everyone to get it passed. So it's really hard for the public to wrap their head around, okay, what did legislators approve and how is it affecting my daily life? So they can make kind of a informed decision on whether they agree, whether they want to keep going that way or not. So I think that's part of the problem. It's very, very tricky when it's hard to know what's in it. I mean, even I had to kind of go back and remind myself. I had to go back and remind myself. And some of the things in here, I honestly had forgotten it was in there, you know? Like, you can already apply for putting a solar on your roof and getting tax rebates. I thought that hadn't kicked in yet, but you can get a 30% tax credit. It's there. But when you get that tax credit, do you put it together? Do people say, oh, that's from the Inflation Reduction Act? And they go, oh, no, great.
Well, that's
money. Right. Thank you.
That's the problem. And that's the challenge that the Biden campaign is going to have in the next 6 to 8 months, right?
Yep.
Is convincing people that they should get the credit for all this stuff that's happening when, in fact, people don't connect the administration in power with good things happening in the economy. That's an old saw.
But let me ask you this, because at the same time, the economy is, you know, doing relatively well. We're seeing inflation come down.
Yeah.
And then we had a AP release a poll today, I think it was, saying Biden's approval rating and handling of the economy is at 36%, hasn't budged in about a year and a half. Why?
Yep. Yeah.
I don't know.
Because, well, so people remember inflation at 9%, right?
Yeah.
Which it was a year ago, instead of the 3% it is now, or the 1.9% it is in the past 90 days. So that's the biggest thing. Part number two of that is that when Jay Powell, the chairman of the Fed, said these prices were going to be transitory. So first of all, he was wrong on inflation being transitory. But we all misunderstood what transitory meant, right? We said, oh, the Fed chair says price increases are transitory. That means they will go up and they will come down.
That's not what happens, right?
Yeah. They have gone up and they have stayed up. And that's the challenge now that the Biden administration has to deal with.
It's that frustration every time you go buy something and it's more expensive than it was 2 years ago. 100%. And you think, the economy's in trouble, even if it
100%.
Isn't.
Yeah. Exactly.
Agreed.
All right. Lead us on.
Let's do it. Next clip.
So sometimes I work from home, and because I'm actually neighbors with some of my other Swifties, Kelly and Jane. But this is one where sometimes we'll actually stop by at local cafes, or because of internet connectivity issues, we'll even hit up some of the local bars. This is one where they know to make us the virgin drinks. So.
Wow.
So talk about changing work culture, right? This was a very interesting conversation I had last week in San Francisco at the headquarters of a company called SIFT. That's why they call themselves Sifties. And it's kind of an online fraud detection company. I went into their 30,000 square foot offices in downtown San Francisco, and there were maybe 24 people in it. It's designed for 200.
Sheesh.
Yeah. And they're only open on Wednesday. So I went on the one Wednesday when they were actually open. So this is, you know, they get it. They signed a lease in the end of 2019. They realize that the workers, even if they need to get together for work, they don't even have to, they don't need the office to do it. They're going to the bars or coffee shops. So will this company in the 7 year, you know, it's a 7 year lease, so expires, what, 2026? Will it keep the entire 30,000 square feet of office space?
Well, so look, you're at Marketplace World headquarters right now. I'm in my shed at home, but you're downtown right now. We've got 20,000 square feet of office space, give or take, maybe 25. And as I've said on the radio many a time, and if anybody at our corporate overlords is listening, this is really a question that I think you ought to answer to those of us who work at Marketplace World headquarters. How long is it going to be sustainable for us to have on an average day 4 people in there? So the last 2 days when you've been there, Nova, there's been like 8, 10, maybe 12, right?
Yeah, it's been positively
bustling.
But there's
so much room, and it's got to be costing this company so much money, and I just don't get it. I don't get it, and I don't understand how it's sustainable.
It's probably not just for us, but for all these companies.
Right,
at some point, they're going to give back some of this office space. They're going to negotiate down the rent. So, you know, we've been covering this, you know, in the PM show, AM show, everywhere, you know, about the reckoning that's coming in the commercial real estate market. Yep. But it directly ties into the trouble downtowns are having, which was the two-part story I did earlier in the week that this sound clip came from, the reporting from that. Because downtowns have been designed, many downtowns, to be just the place you go to the office. And the researcher I talked to at University of Toronto made a very good point. She said, that's a relic of the industrial past. Downtowns have to fundamentally shift what they do or what they're about, because those days are gone forever.
Right. Well, so look, sorry, I'm just pulling this up really quickly so I can speak about it intelligently and not like an idiot. Lead story in the New York Times this afternoon was for about a nanosecond, how the city's working on taking office space in Midtown Manhattan, like Midtown South, and turning it into residences, right? It's unoccupied commercial real estate. So it's happening.
That's one of the...
It is happening.
That's one of those, you know, the University of Toronto researcher, Karen Chappell, she said, you know, everybody asks me what the magic formula is. She says, there isn't one, but certainly that's one of the answers. And a lot of cities, especially mid-sized cities, actually, frankly, have been trying that out, and it's working out for them.
Right. So just, I'll read it. Here's the headline. New York plans to convert parts of Midtown Manhattan to housing. So this is some of the most expensive real estate on the planet, right, that is not being used for commercial or industrial space. They're going to make it into residences now.
Also anyway. Where our New York bureau is.
Yeah, that's well, you know, pull up a cot, everybody. All right. Here's another one. Let's go.
So I went with this large group of people, and the person who had arranged our dinner did the ordering. There was a delicious mushroom dish. I was not aware that these mushrooms had hallucinogenic properties. I learned that later. I can tell you that
later,
none
like
of
in
us
your when you were sleeping and having visions,
mushrooms.
Or.
I love that tape.
I was read that if the mushrooms are cooked properly, which I'm sure they were at this very good restaurant, that they have no impact. But all of us enjoyed the mushrooms, the restaurant, and none of us felt any ill effects from having eaten them.
So that was the Secretary of the Treasury, obviously, Janet Yellen, on Aaron Burnett Show on CNN a couple of nights ago, where Aaron had read about this food blogger in China who paid attention to where Yellen went to dinner one of the nights that we were in Beijing. I Marketplace traveled with her, and we did an interview. But Yellen and her traveling party, her staff, went out and went to this place where apparently they did hallucinogenic mushrooms. And the best part about that tape, other than the Secretary of the Treasury possibly tripping on shrooms, was that people get to hear her actually in her natural state, which is to say, when you are talking to her off mic, off the record, no recording, no nothing, she giggles and laughs and she is personable and warm. And it's really nice to have that little slice of her coming out, because when you interview her, she's very serious, as
very
befits
measured.
Her job, right? Yeah. I mean, this is a woman who could move markets and change global policy if she says the wrong thing. So she knows what she's doing, obviously. But it's great that she let that slice of her come out, I thought.
Yeah, and what we need stories like this.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
We really do.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a great story.
That's what I'm saying. All right, last one of the day, and then we will move along. We're going to play a little round of Name That Tune, a little bit of a song that a listener sent us as their economic anthem of the moment. We talked about this a couple of times. We're going to try to guess what it is. I am very bad at Name That Tune. Nova, you are at least more musically inclined than I am.
So, I'm very terrified.
I'm going to fire up my Slack so that somebody can hit me up with it once it plays. But here comes the song.
Okay.
I get no doubt.
I want. Is that like Chumbawamba or somebody? Come on. Is it Chumbawamba? Somebody hit me. I might be right, which would be amazing. Nope. Yes.
Hey!
Yes. Yes. Top thumping by Chumbawamba. Unbelievable.
I am impressed.
A little bit hip. Of course, that song was probably like 25 or 30 years old. Anyway.
Well, I think
so. Steve, go ahead.
A win is a win, man. Take the win.
A win is a win. Steve in Massachusetts sent us that song. We will have a link to the show note in the show notes to the Spotify playlist with all of those listener submissions. And if you've got one, hit us up with it. You know how to do that. It is, 508 UB Smart or Make Me Smart at Marketplace.org is how you do that. Here are the lyrics. Thank you to Marissa Cabrera. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You ain't never going to keep me down. I get knocked down, but I get up again. You are never going to keep me down. I think it's ain't never going to keep me down, right? Anyway, there we go.
You
I sing every now and then on this podcast.
So much fun on this show. I'm a little jealous.
Well,
and tomorrow we get to drink alcohol, so it's really great.
We do. Although, you know, I have to figure out how much I can drink, because I have to do a thing with my mother-in-law tomorrow night. But anyway, that's a whole different thing. All right, we're done for today. Tomorrow is Economics on Tap. I will probably have a beer because I want to. Okay. YouTube live stream at 3:30 Pacific, 6:30 Eastern. Sign up for our weekly newsletter while you're just hanging around waiting for that. We'll share reading recommendations, let you in on what we are drinking for a happy hour tomorrow, even though Ellen Rolfes wrote me at like 5 o'clock my time this morning and said, what are you drinking tomorrow? And I said, I don't know. I'll figure it out later. Marketplace.org/newsletters is where you can sign up for those.
She wrote me yesterday afternoon, and I frantically went looking for an answer.
There you go. Make Me Smart is produced by Courtney Bergseeker. Today's episode was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. Ellen Rolfes, the aforementioned Ellen Rolfes, writes our newsletter. Our intern is Neela Farshabandi.
Oh, Marissa Cabrera is our senior producer. Bridget Botner is the director of podcasts. And Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital.
I'm just gonna say here, I'm better than I thought I was. Chumbawamba, I said it was 25 years old. It was released in 1997, 26 years ago.
What?
How good am I? That was me
you
dropping
are,
the mic right there.
You need to buy God, a lottery card today.
I am on fire.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.